You know, we all know about the tragic events of last week. Ironically, it's also the 74th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, which reminded me of Franklin Roosevelt's words that we have nothing to fear. The greatest thing we have to fear is fear itself. I'd like to have a moment of silence in memory of the victims, please.
Thank you very much. Welcome to tonight's meeting. I just, before we get started, I'd just like to remind everyone that this year, one of the board goals that we've made is that everyone treat each other with the utmost of respect and kindness. This is a public meeting. We're all here. We may disagree on certain issues. We should still be respectful to each other. And one of the things that's important also is when you're chattering amongst yourselves in the audience, we might not be able to hear it, but the other people may. And those other people may be students, maybe somebody's spouse, or somebody's parent. So I just ask that we just become a kinder, gentler, and more respectful district, especially at these board meetings. So thank you very much. High school representative.
Alrighty. So there are a lot of teachers here. It kind of feels like I'm giving an oral presentation today, especially because I have or had a lot of them. So starting off on the 3rd of December, we had our Foreign Language Honor Society induction, including students from the Spanish, Spanish, French, American Sign Language, or ASL, and Italian students. On the 4th, we had our video game tournament, and Engineering Awareness Night had a great turnout, and that was also on the 4th. Upcoming news, there's a MetMonk conference on the 11th through 12th, so that'll be fun for the MetMonk students. The 16th, there will be a jazz band and orchestra concert, and before that, there will be a senior citizens tea at 3:30. Community service hours will be rewarded for those juniors and seniors participating. There will be holiday music, and lastly, there will be a tea and nice little refreshment served for these senior citizens at 3:30. So that's our school.
Do we have anyone here from the middle school? I know we don't all the time, but sometimes we do. Everyone? Nope. Okay. Board announcements. Emily.
In keeping with what Mr. Goldsmith just told us about, I attended the Foreign Language Honor Society inductions on, believe it was Thursday? Yes. And it was great to see so many students who are participating in foreign language. So congratulations to them and the staff as well.
Just wanted to take a minute or two during the board announcements to give the board, as well as the community, a little bit of an update on the happenings of the board's policy committee. For those of you that know, the board has a policy committee. There are three of us on the committee. Joining me are Ms. Bernstein, Ms. Schulman. We work very closely with Dr. Vince over here. We have been meeting over the last few months and focusing on four new policies, as well as a review of our current policy book. The review of the current policy book is in conjunction with the New York State School Boards Association. We're looking to ensure that all of the required policies are up to date, as well as to reconfigure, renumber the policies to make them more categorized and numbered for more ease of reference for everyone. The four new policies that we're working on, one is the consistent with our goals, is a new adult code of ethics. It is our hope and expectation to have a draft of that policy for the board's and the board's review and the community's stakeholders' feedback, if not the next meeting, then certainly the first meeting in January. We're also working on a transgender issues policy, a Narcan policy, and an unmanned aerial vehicle policy, also known as drones. And so it is our hope that we get all of those forward to the whole board and for feedback from all of our stakeholders in the next couple weeks to couple months.
I just wanted to thank, I along with some of our central administration, were we had a great time. We were cordially invited to our Plainview Olbeth Page Senior Citizens Holiday Party. It was so much fun, and it was wonderful meeting a lot of our seniors in our community. It was my first holiday party, and I thank you so much. I look forward, looking forward to many of them in the near future. So thank you so much for thinking of us, and it was a lot of fun.
I just want to bring your attention to, although I don't think I need to bring your attention to it, but the artwork that has been displayed in the boardroom. So this was a project that was started with Dr. Chen and myself last year, and we, and some of it is selfish on my part, but sitting in here each Monday night looking at some of the old dingy artwork that was in here, and it wasn't kid-produced. So we just thought, you know, what better way to highlight and showcase some of our students in the district? And since this room obviously needed an upgrade, what a better way to highlight our schools? So student artwork was chosen from each of the schools, and we plan on continuing changing the artwork in here twice a year with students' work selected from each of their schools. But each student has received a letter, and their name is identified under each piece of artwork. But I want to thank Ben Wiley, he's laughing back there, for helping me complete the project and his input in choosing the pieces. So again, congratulations to the students and their families. And again, Ben, I see you're here tonight, so thank you very much for helping finish it. Okay, Dr. Ludico, can you come join us? All right. So Dr. Ludico has received a very prestigious recognition into the NiceGate Hall of Fame, and he has served on the board and been a member of that organization for some time, but they just recently recognized him for all of his efforts in terms of the technology field, not only obviously here to POB, but throughout the state. And you know, supporting other school districts and organizations. You know, one of the things when we talk about, you know, we try to look at best practices, and so oftentimes we hear from other districts that Guy has weighed in and provided some guidance and advice in rolling out the technology in their district. So what a nice honor that you are now in their Hall of Fame. So congratulations, and we're very proud that you're part of our team.
Just want to thank the board. Thank you so much. I'm very grateful for this honor. It was a great experience to go back up to Rochester and see my star on the Hall of Fame on the Convention Center. And I just have to thank my my colleague, Michelle Zeppelin, secretary. I could not have this without the support I get from my team in the office every day and everybody here. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
So we're going to start. You want to start with school construction? Yeah, we're going to, I'm sorry, Christian, we're going to hold you off to, we're going to move it up to the bond update with our school construction consultants. So I would like to invite them up to our quasi-modified table here. Hopefully this week our new tables will arrive, and we'll have this boardroom back in shape.
Make sure it's on. It's on now.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Will Reese. I'm one of the principals of School Construction Consultants, and we're a construction management firm. We've been serving school districts for over 20 years on Long Island, and that's our primary focus. I'd like to introduce Robert Caliendo, Bob Caliendo. He is our project executive on this project. He's in charge of the overall services that we provide for the district. Brad Cohen is our project manager. He's here every day. Full-time, he's the day-to-day go-to person for the district. Just want to give you a little rundown of where we are in the project team for the bond and for the capital projects. We are the construction manager. We work kind of alongside the architect, serving the district, the administration. We work very closely with Andrew Ward from facilities and Rich Cunningham from the finance office. And our chief duties are interacting with the contractors, coordinating their work, making sure that work is being conducted in accordance with the construction documents. We also help coordinate the testing, the inspections that occur, you know, as the project progresses. And certainly we interact with the architect and with the district. And Brad especially interacts directly with the facilities, with each individual building on a daily basis. Some of the responsibilities that we have as construction manager during the pre-construction phase, before projects are out to bid, we hold regular owner architect construction management meetings. They're held monthly currently, and we conduct those meetings and we go over things like where we are in the design timeline, where we stand with the budgets. We talk about document reviews, issues that have come up, coordination of the projects, when facilities might be available and not available to do certain projects, and we keep a record of meeting minutes as we move forward. When we get to the bidding and procurement period of the projects, we assist in getting garnering contractor interest. You know, we make phone calls, emails, try to get people to bid on the projects so that you have competitive quality contractors on board. Once projects are awarded, Brad will be the project manager on a daily basis, you know, with our assistant Bob and myself, and we're conducting the project, coordinating with the contractors. And again, we're your eyes and ears. We're making sure that the project is being conducted according to the construction documents. We're maintaining the project records, daily reports, financial records. We're tracking the schedule and the budget. Of course, it's very important because you have a limited finite number that we need to make sure that we're under when the project is all said and done. And then we monitor the closeout of the project, punch list, as-builts, and making sure that you have all your warranty documents. We want to talk a little bit about the work that has been completed. Most of it was this summer, and then some of the work that's scheduled to go forward. I'm actually going to give it to Bob. He'll talk to you a little bit about the work that was completed.
I apologize for being on a microphone. I might break out into a Dean Martin impersonation, so just bear with me for a second. For just a touch base of what Brad does do on a daily basis when he's out here doing the construction, he's also making sure that the contractors are following the contract documents and the bid specifications. So he's out in the field, like Will said, on a daily basis. If there's any questions that do come up, he's in the first contact with the architect, along with the contractor, just to make sure that they're following the guidelines. So to get to the summary of the completed work for 2014, as everybody can see on POB Middle School, Plainville Bethpage Middle School, the floor tile replacement has taken place. That has been completed. and the baseball, the replacement of the baseball field backstop. The same goes for Stratford Road Elementary School. Parkway Elementary School floor tile has been taking place also. Again, this is all the work that has been done over the summertime. Between JFK and Matlin Middle School, it would be almost identical where we did floor tile and the tennis courts, both tennis courts having six in total being done. Matlin also received a full roof recoating. We had done all the roof work over at Matlin Middle School. Pasadena Elementary School, floor tile replacement along with the roof recoat over the library and cafeteria. There was an RPZ retaining wall that needed to be repaired, and we were able to obtain three proposals, which we were able to achieve a very good price from actually one of the contractors on site. Being that he was on site, he gave us a value discount price, which became the lower bidder. So we were able to fix and repair that retaining wall. Old Beth Page Elementary School, floor tile and full reef coat was taking place and completed. The next slide will show you some of the photos of the completed work. As you can see, dramatic changes take place just with floor tile alone. Simple floor tile can just beautify the buildings immensely. Next slide will show you the tennis courts. From what I'm hearing from everybody out in the field, the community has been, you know, ecstatic about the tennis courts. They've been using them on a daily basis, and it was a very well put together tennis courts, and I believe that the community enjoys it. You can see the Stratford Road baseball field under construction, and then to the right you'll see how it was completed with the middle school as far as the backstops and where the dugouts are. Matlin Middle School roofing, that's a part of, we have a combination on that one actually. We have a capital project and we have a bond project. The roof recoat was for the bond, and then the capital was the skylights. The blessing to that one also was that the roofing contractor actually was the lower bidder to replace the skylights. So we held him to holding the warranty on both. So we didn't have a roofing contractor saying that the skylights caused the roof leak and vice versa. So that was a true bonus to the district. The balance of phase one work, Stratford Road Elementary School, we have some floor tile that still needs to be done. Parkway Elementary School roof recoat for the library and the cafeteria. If you look, there's a little star and asterisk where it says SED approval has been received. You can see the windows and doors for Parkway Elementary School and Pasadena Elementary School. We have received the SED approvals on both of them, and as you can tell, we got the architect preparing bid documents for both of those schools. That went up as a package. Phase two, bond projections. A project scheduled for the commencement of 2016. Parkway Elementary School and Pasadena Elementary School, we just received SED approval on the doors and hardware for both of those. So right now we have the architect working on bid packages and bid specifications for both. And then goes down the list of items that we are still in the process of waiting for drawings to be finalized and submission to SED, which, as you can tell, masonry, ADA, HVAC, it's basically all the meat and potatoes for the infrastructure. POB Middle School and Stratford Road. POB Middle School window replacements were in the bid stage. As you can see, we also have received SED approvals on that. Again, all of the other items that are waiting for the bid packages to come back from SED or the finalization to be submitted as far as comments go. Same goes for Stratford. JFK High School, this is projected to be continued for the summer of 2016. We have electrical upgrades at JFK, Old Beth Page. Elementary the same. Jamaica Avenue, if you look to your right, we have received SED approvals for window replacements on that. Again, they're in the bid stage. Also, doors and hardware. I think we just received SED approvals on that one for Jamaica. So. Okay, phase three. As you can see now, we're going into later years in 2017. Again, a lot of this is pending on SED approvals. You know, SED, as everybody knows, are in backlog. So The architect can submit a set of drawings and documents for SED approval, and we're looking at 42 weeks for anything that includes electrical or mechanical. So the delays that are taking place from SED are delaying some of these items to be put out to bid, unfortunately. Again, this is not, you know, subject to just Plainview or Bethpage. This is district-wide. This is throughout the state. So if you take a look, I won't bore you on anything, but you can see what's projected for 2017.
I just want to add one quick thing. You'll see the asterisk for Jamaica Avenue windows. There are certain projects that are being packaged together. Even though there might be a phase three project package with the phase two project, there's certain efficiencies for the architecture team to do projects, you know, together as one package and send that to SED and bid it. So you might see some of that, you know, combinations of, you know, phase two, phase three.
Next slide. Phase three, we have, again, coming back to Matlin Middle School and Pasadena Elementary School, mid-17. Again, basically all infrastructure work. Not to bore you, but it would be the same thing for Old Bethpage. And district-wide, right. District-wide fire alarm upgrades, technical electrical upgrades, and localized cabinetry replacements. Correct.
Phase four is really the tail end of the bond, and in the bond documents, there are some elementary classrooms scheduled. I believe they're kind of in consideration as far as where they're going to go. That's why I have a TBD there. They're not called out to be at a specific building at this point, and that's going to depend on, you know, the final plans for the district. And there's also some B-list projects that were being considered, and that'll all depend, of course, on remaining bond referendum funds. The A-list projects would have to get done first, and then the B-list projects can be considered with remaining funds. We're also involved in some of the capital reserve projects. The top section are the completed projects. As Bob mentioned, we did the skylight replacement along with the roof at Matlin. The track reconstruction, that was the first project that was underway this summer for us and, you know, with the district. And the boiler project, you'll see a photo of that coming up. That was just awarded, and we're about to have a kickoff meeting on that. And there are also some upcoming capital projects that we'll be involved in. Like I said, the boiler projects and roof replacement at JFK, window replacements at JFK. And they'll be phased in. These projects will be phased in, again, you know, to be efficient with the rest of the bond work. And these are the current boilers at Matlin, and they'll be replaced in the upcoming project. And that work, of course, will be done after the heating season. But thank you for the opportunity to present, and if you have any questions, feel free. Yes.
Yeah. Skylights in the atrium, have we looked at anything, what we're doing with those since we replaced? I thought that those were all-inclusive.
They were bid along with the capital projects. From what I understand, they were not under the budget. You know, there was a laundry list of skylights, you know, as part of the bid package. And we were able to do, was it 250 skylights? 175 skylights with the budget that was allocated. So we're looking for other opportunities to maybe do the atrium skylights, because I know it's kind of important. I don't know if Mr. Ward
it's
has
like
any
It's like running
other.
A marathon and stopping right before the line and saying, So, and it really does change when you go upstairs and you see what the skylight's doing. It just makes it clean and everything else. Mm-hmm. The roof at Kennedy High School where the new addition was, that had a lot of leakage problems. Has that been resolved?
That's more of an architectural question as they prepare the drawings, but we will definitely bring that up with them to make sure they're considering that, yes.
And we're using foam for our roofs? Is that what I saw, the white foam?
Yes, it's a foam recoating of the roof, yep. It gets scarified and then it gets recoated and then you get your warranty.
Right, because
that.
That's supposed to keep the heat in during the winter and during the summer. It's supposed to keep it cooler.
It has tremendous insulating properties, yeah, from what I understand. because of the thickness, and you know, it really is like a barrier of insulation.
Additional classrooms. In the bond, we had talked about 3 additional classrooms. For if we determine a building that it's going to be in, or the buildings, 42 weeks, from what point in time?
The 42 weeks is listed on the SED website for the engineering review. So once it gets submitted by the architect to the state, it's at least 42 weeks just for them to review the drawings, and then it has to go out to bid. Well, first of all, there might be comments from the state and that have to be, you know, clarified or, you know, resent up. Then it has to go out to bid, and that could be a 6-8 week process. So it could be a year from SED submission to the time that we award those projects.
And our line of priorities, if you know, we are moving a kindergarten center into elementary buildings, mm-hmm. so that, and I don't know our population right now, but right now it can't handle it. But when would it behoove us to get that work up to SED?
For the classrooms?
Yeah.
It really is going to depend on when you want them. What's September? If it's September of 18 or 17, then that's really how we back it from there. If you're looking to get them in September of 17, we really have to act like now, basically, you know, with the planning, the final planning, and there are surveys that have to be ordered and get done. Boring, soil borings have to get done in the location of the additions. So there's a little preliminary work that has to get done. So, you know, the sooner the better, I would
say. So I would imagine then it's at the board's request that we just say when we really want to start this.
Yes, obviously it's your decision as far as where. That's the big question. And then we can proceed from there along with the architect.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Kind of piggybacking on something Ginger said about the kindergarten center, since the plan is to close the kindergarten center next year, would we be doing the kindergarten center gym, air conditioning it, the year after? I mean, I think it's more of a question for our central administrators, not...
Right. These are the types of questions that would come up, would be brought up by the administration at our monthly meetings. So we would be gladly, you know, I think we should make that a topic.
So, Debbie, you mentioned the K-Center phys ed. I just had a meeting with Mr. Braco about the, basically, the district-wide use of facilities and the teams that are using the gyms. And one of the things that he spoke about very briefly at this point in time was the amount of use that the wrestling room is getting up at Matlin, and also the outside organizations that want to use that room with the mats rolled out, and then the time that young kids actually have to get in the gym because those mats are rolled out at Matlin. So perhaps we could look at using the kindergarten space for cheerleading and wrestling to take place over there, that can be more set up for long term rather than rolling up the mats and leaving it out. So that's one suggestion mm-hmm. of how to utilize that space. But again, that would be a district-wide conversation, and that would make sense to have that space air-conditioned. And air-conditioned, should we move in any direction, to more permanently use that and mm-hmm. that
okay.
space.
I just want to know that we're thinking about that. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. This was great. Thank you. Keep up the good
Thank
work.
Thank you very much.
So far, the projects are going great.
Yes, very good.
what type of warranty is there with the foam roofs that the resurfacing?
15-year warranty.
You know, I just want one more question. Just when you talked about the SED approval, about the 42 weeks and then actually time to go out to bid, are we, the projects that that have gone out to SED so far, are they within that timeline, earlier, later? Are they, I mean, that was what we said?
Strategically, a lot of the contracts that were issued had to do with architectural review. Architectural review right now is a lot of shorter timeline,
right.
Except for the boiler project. The boiler project being under the capital and not so much the bond, that was submitted a long time ago. So, yes, your answer, yes, 42 weeks is the current timeline. Again, what Will is saying is that the submission, comments, and such. So, We were fortunate we got a lot of the architectural portion of it, which I believe was 20...
No, the architecture portion, like
24
say...
weeks?
No, 6 to 10 weeks.
6 to 10 weeks, okay.
So if it's pure architecture work, like roofing, I believe doors, you know, doors and hardware, those are much quicker. Ceilings are quick, but once you add lights to the ceilings, it becomes an architectural engineering project.
So that's why we're seeing some projects go much quicker and able to accomplish those rather than some of these
and
more
some
extensive
of the later
scheduled
projects are actually being scheduled earlier just because they're architectural in nature, so they can go earlier.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
To add one more comment about your concerns about the skylights for the atrium. Being there, we're so early in the project, and we didn't have the funds allocated at that point. During the course, as the projects are going on, and there are fund balances left on the bond, we can revisit it and go out to bid again.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
RTI.
Yep.
You know, I just want to piggyback just for our discussion on the report. I think Ms. Lieberman brought up a good point about the extra classrooms. If we're committed, as we've said that we are, for fall of 2017, not fall of 2018, as the report suggests, I think we need to make sure we have that discussion with the architects and other personnel to ensure that that gets done as in the time frame, at least gets in and out of our hands in a timely fashion.
You can have construction going on, you know, various. Once we get approval, we're on free.
Right, and if it's going to take at least 42 weeks,
right,
plus another, you know, we're talking about a year, I'd give ourselves a little cushion because everything takes a little bit longer.
Yep.
So.
Right, so we'll follow up with the architects regarding that and then have set up a conversation because obviously there still needs to be worked on ahead of time on that.
Yeah.
Okay, so at this point in time, I'd like to invite Mr. Bowen up to, I'm sorry? Unfortunately, the side screens are not working right now due to the technology. We hope to have this updated within the next week or so, or by at least the January meeting, I'm hoping that it'll be set up. But Mr. Bowen, thank you, and Mrs. Gray, thank you for joining us. For tonight's presentation, this is a follow-up. If you recall, we did a presentation last year for at the end of the year on our AIS ELA program, and at that time we had asked to find out more information about how AIS is with regard to mathematics. So Mr. Bowen has prepared this presentation this evening, and with some input from our elementary and middle school staff, and I just want to thank you.
Good evening. So let me just quickly give an overview of really what AIS math is about and how it sort of rolls out in the classroom. If you really just look at the chart on the right, you know, you might have a typical student below grade level, let's say, with not the same slope as our expected student. And our real goal is really to close that achievement gap. And if you look at that vertical line, that's really where the AIS specialist would step in. And our goal is really to work on fluency, develop math concepts that they might have missed prior to that line, and close the achievement gap. So we do that with similar to the ELA model of the three tiers.
We're not seeing the whole presentation.
Is there a way to?
You're not seeing the whole presentation. We just have to change the projection so that you can see the bottom of it. And then while we're waiting, Jen Temkin is one of the new AIS. I know you just wanted to wave and say hi. She's split between Pasadena and Stratford. So she just wanted to wave and say hi.
I think those might be fun after that, Rich. Yeah. Yeah. So the way we go about doing this is really the three-tiered RTI. The bulk of our students, you know, are Tier 1, and everything's handled within the classroom by the general ed teacher. Our Tier 2 really begins with small groups. Most of that is done through push-in, and it's really about being preventative and proactive. Many of this occurs at the grade 1 and 2 level for Tier 2. We try to do as much push-in as possible at those levels, try and get a better feel for where the students are at, what their struggles are, and what their strengths are. Tier 3 becomes a little more intensive, and those are really where we try to set up our small groups. I'm going to speak to it right now, but in one of the other slides, we've added a 0.5 math specialist at the elementary buildings, and this has been so helpful in really focusing on the Tier 3 remediation for these students. It allows us a lot more flexibility in the classroom in terms of pulling from one teacher and not mixed, and focusing possibly on what concepts need to be worked on rather than just who's with what teacher. So that has definitely helped out a tremendous so far this year. So what does Math AS look like at POB? The biggest thing that we've really focused on in the last, you know, 2.5 years or so is really the math fluency. If we want our students to multiply and they're struggling with addition and subtraction, we're going to hit that first. So we really are trying to catch up all the students on their math fluency. The next thing would be the concept development. So that's where we'll really go back to, let's say, a previously year's concept and focus on that, getting some manipulatives out. We'll also do quite a bit of pre-teaching and reteaching. Again, those are really focusing on the major concepts for the grade level. We understand through AAS we can't teach an entire grade level, you know, providing remediation to the student every other day. So we really have the major content emphases, the 70% is what our focus is for. And then, of course, problem solving. That's really one of the biggest struggles for many students is, you know, decoding the word problems, figuring out which strategy would work best. Again, going back to that fluency, if a child is struggling with multiplying 3 times 8 and the problem involves multiplication, we really want that to be the focus on the solving of the math problem and reading the word problem rather than worrying about the 3 times 8 portion. Regarding staffing, again, for each elementary building, we have 1.5. This year, as Ms. Gray just pointed out, we've added Jen Temkin at 2 buildings, and we've also hired Caitlin to work at the other 2 buildings. So they are rotating on an odd and even basis so that they're maximizing their time within those buildings. At the middle schools, for POB, we have 2.8, and 2 of that is full-time AS teachers and 0.8 shared. And at Matlin, it's 2.0 with 1 full-time and 1 shared.
So we're going to talk a little bit about the academic intervention services and the resources that we've used or that we're currently using. Fast Math is a program that, before we received the 0.5 additions to our buildings, was embedded within the period, the math period, the math AIS period. Many of us are now allowing our students, right when they get off the bus, to walk into the Fast Math, the computer lab, the classroom, and get on Fast Math right away. So the flexibility to work outside of those AIS periods on building fluency was added with those 0.5 teachers. It's a program where the teachers recommend, we give a diagnostic test, and the children, where they perform, that allows us to create Fast Math groups. And we're using a stretch program, which is an added piece where the kids can also work on the Fast Math program at home, but it's not, it's more fun. I should say it looks more like games, and the children do enjoy going home and getting on it. It's about 20 minutes in the morning, and it's really helped us to build some fluency facts. The principals and I met, and we talked about what we're looking for when we go into the math classrooms right now, and we are looking for and seeing a lot more student engagement. So the manipulatives are out, where they're taking time, they're moving away from videos with the Envisions program, and they're taking time to really dive deeper into some of those areas where children were struggling and to build that concept development. IXL was added this year, so all teachers in all the elementary schools received an email invitation. They started to sign on. The principals have sent out instructions for teachers to create their rosters, and then Christian will be in every building right after the new year to assist those teachers in using IXL. It's a phenomenal program. Many of the teachers have already signed on and are using it on the smart boards with the whole class. Sure. So it's a computer program. It's a web-based program where the tabs on the top, there's mathematics, science, social studies, language arts, and it's a program where you can pull it up whole class and work on a specific skill in math, or you can assign children onto the computers, on the iPads or the Chromebooks, whatever we have in the buildings, and they're able to sign in and practice math. So it's skill-based. The Engage New York modules, all grades have been exposed to it in all of the curriculum writing so far. We have focused somewhat on the modules. Every grade, including first grade, they have units now where modules, resources from the modules are embedded within. The teachers, the AIS and the classroom teachers are collaborating, and there's many more websites now that the classroom teachers are using, either to assign for homework or as some do-nows or activities in the class. And some of those include the Matifica websites, 10 marks. The kids love getting on and earning points and playing games, building their facts, and we're seeing a lot of engagement and happy children with that. And then this year we introduced the STAR assessment. So Christian's going to talk a little bit more about that. That's at the bottom of the slide later on in the presentation.
So on the chart here, you'll see the number of students receiving AIS services in each building in the past 3 years. For this year, obviously, these are not set in stone, being that it's December. As I said, the teachers in the elementary buildings in particular are really working with the grade one students. And by mid-year is typically when we finalize who they're seeing on a set basis, you know, whether it's three out of the six or two out of the six. So you're missing the footnote on the PowerPoint, but it is, you know, in the handout. But you'll see, in many cases, those numbers are going down. And I'll show you why I think at least part of the reason is on a future slide. But again, I think part of it is really focusing and getting to these students as early as possible. And there's also some structures that have changed in the buildings as well, you know, in terms of blocking out time for students, making sure math has a set time and no interruption. And that's a great, great deal of help. So on the next slide, which sort of ties into the previous slide, is really the growth in proficiency over the past 3 years with the state assessment. You know, the state has a mandate of AIS services at a particular cut score. Typically, a low two would be the state mandate. We raised that bar a little more. But you'll see if students are performing better on state assessments, then the mandate from the state would be decreased. So I think that's pretty clear. This is not the end-all be-all, so if a student is not taking a state assessment, that does not mean anything in terms of getting in or out of AIS. But those are typical mandates from the state. Some of the professional development, you know, obviously I began in 2013, so I've seen all of this. When I first got here, one of the consultants we worked pretty heavily with was Larry Farrell. In that first year, we did about 30 sessions from K-8. Again, our focus was really on fluency first. That has always been something that we've really been trying to hammer out. And then beyond that was concept development. In addition, for AIS service providers, we also had special sessions for them, which definitely helped out the small group and how to differentiate and how to actually go back to a grade level or two grade levels prior to, and what are some of the things you want to target with that. Did you want to share?
So Larry worked K-8 the first year. The second year was building specific. This year we're seeing K-2 and 3-5 together. The classroom teachers are working alongside some of the AIS teachers, and the professional development that's coming out of that is It's ongoing because it doesn't just stop when Larry leaves. The AIS providers are hearing the same issues, and they're going back to the buildings, and they're working and problem-solving with the classroom teachers on what needs to be strengthened, where our weaknesses are. The additional AIS provider has allowed us to structure AIS differently. As Christian mentioned, it's not just by classroom teacher. We used to pull from many different classrooms on a grade. Now we're able to push into one classroom. So professional development is embedded right within that model alone, because now the kids can be pulled out, the teacher, the AIS provider can be pushed in. The collaboration and the planning that's ongoing because of the two teachers working together has shown growth. It's more questions have come out of those sessions. The planning in the morning, during professional hours, during grade conferences have really targeted some of the work now that the AIS providers have some more flexibility in their schedules. The teachers are asking to go to out-of-district workshops, but in addition to that, some of the 18-hour staff development sessions have included new strategies, new resources. Christian has pushed in to all of the buildings to review, and I know you don't want me to talk about this, but I'm going to pat you on the back a little bit. He has pushed into professional hours, grade-level meetings, specific classroom teachers to review data and to look at the data and really pull it apart and say, what are we looking at? What does it mean? What are the implications for instruction? And how are we going to change that so we all have a level playing field? He's talked about that at monthly math specialist meetings and the AIS providers. This year, I spoke with all the principals. They have been collaborating more so this year than any other year. They're doing a lot of fluency work, a lot of specific station work, and we're seeing a difference in the children's abilities in terms of fluency. Is there anything else? The curriculum writing, I'll just speak a little bit about. We've been focusing on building assessments on the major content areas in each grade, and it's also including some of the new resources. So as I said before, some modules, some Go Math. It's about best practices right now, and it's not about a specific program. And I think that that's changed over the years.
So just to name a few of the accomplishments so far as part of this program, as we just noted, the PD that's been going on has really been beneficial, obviously within the day, but more importantly, after the day is over and teachers are discussing and in following up meetings and having, that's where the real PD, I think, really rolls out and comes out. We've also done a lot of work with developing, updating, and analyzing data at the district, building, teacher, and student levels. And I think this has really targeted the instruction for the classroom teacher as well as the AIS provider. And it's really given a lot clearer picture of, well, when someone says this student struggles with math, we now know what does he or she struggle with in particular. Is it ratios and proportions, or is it expressions and equations? So that's really been beneficial. We've also aligned our rubrics for these assessments to be very similar to what the New York State assessment has in terms of their holistic rubric. We've obviously, as I said, analyzed student performance. We've decreased the number of students receiving AIS. I mean, this is one of the accomplishments we have to date. I mean, our ultimate goal really is to have no students receiving AIS. But obviously we're going to work with our population to support them. One of the other things we've done is provided earlier intervention. As Suzanne has said, we've had a lot more push in. Grade one, we're trying to really do it in small increments. Here's 20 minutes at a time, getting, to all of the students. In grade four, it looks a little differently. But again, we're trying to get to these students early, grades one and two, so that they can leave the building without needing this. We've also updated their progress reports to reflect the Common Core standards and pacing for the year. And included in these progress reports are really general information for parents as well in terms of where they can go to access more materials and what sort of information is covered at that particular grade level. So I just want to show you three reports that we have really used. This year we'll include it for grade two as well, but the big focus for these reports have been grade 3 to 8. So we've been using Linkit for the past 2.5 years. If you look, this would be a sample student report. I just pulled these three reports randomly from a particular classroom, so there's no set staging here. But you could see basically the red are the questions that the student got incorrectly, and then the orange shows the shading of the open response. What's also beneficial is from a student perspective, and the teachers would get this as well, is are there particular standards that the student does well with or struggles with? And you could tell just by the shading and the highlighting of the colors and the numerical percent for those questions. For teacher data, this is just, again, a sample that we looked at recently. If you just compare those two questions, 13 and 14, for number 14, we do look at those two questions differently. They have very similar percent proficiency, but 14 is a clear distractor question, and we sort of want those. We want to look at why 29% of the students are choosing choice A. And then for number 13, we'll look at, well, why are they choosing B, C, and D? Is it a problem with the question? Is it a problem with the choices? Is it a problem that the students really weren't sure exactly how to handle this question? And so all of those questions get that. What's missing on the presentation, but again is on your handout, is for the open response, we get a breakdown of 0 through 4s, or whatever the point value system is. And again, that's something we could look at as well. Why are students getting 0%? Are they not able to start the problem? And then we also have a student history report. Again, since this has been in the works for 2.5 years, you can really see if you look at on the bottom would be our first assessment for the student. So back in January of 2014, on the grade 4 trimester 2, the student scored a 54, but you could see as the student progresses, the colors have changed from red to yellow to green to dark green, you know, so indicating a lot more success on these trimesters assessments. The September diagnostic, just to this is really what grade 6 is about, you know. A student would take this in September, and it's on skills that they'll need during the year. So that's not reflected in terms of them not knowing the material of grade 6. It's really what we predict out of the rest of the year and what skills they need to work on. So we have a few goals as well for AIS Math, and Suzanne spoke about this. Incorporate a math diagnostic and progress monitoring tool to be used throughout RTI. So we just purchased STAR Assessment, which will provide us an initial diagnostic for the students and also provide us several assessments throughout the year. We'll use them typically on a quarterly trimester basis to follow up with the students. The great thing about this would be it would follow the student throughout their path, you know, from 1 to 8. And we continually use this. We would have historical data on these students as well. These are very quick assessments. This is not something that takes, you know, 2 hours. It's a really 20-minute assessment, and if you do it over time, and that chipping away of it really gives us more information. We also want to explore adaptive learning platforms. STAR Assessments also has a program called Accelerated Math, which is adaptive to students. So we can give that assessment, and it'll tell us which skills should each student work on when you're in your small groups. We still want to continue decreasing the class size of our AS sections. That's definitely something that's been an accomplishment and a goal. At the same time, we've done that this year, and we want to continue to do that. Increasing zero period at AS at the middle school level, as well as grades 2 and 3. So that we definitely think is benefiting a lot of the students coming in, working on fluency, and any other activities that they have planned. And, of course, continue to push in services at the primary grades. That's really, as we spoke about, getting in there 20 minutes at a time, working with small groups. And then the last slide is really just continuing and evaluating really what we have going on in the future. And, again, this involves PD, it involves targeted, it involves data. But I think sharing best practices between schools, sharing information between grade levels, with K-4 approaching for next year, having those discussions of K-1 will be huge for math teachers, and those discussions would definitely benefit the students in the end, and I think we'd be able to evaluate the students with grade 1 with a little more information than we currently are. And that's it, unless you have questions.
I need a way to shut. I just want to be able to shut the light. Yeah. Anyone? Anyone? Questions? Emily?
The breakdown of AIS, to what extent is it, say, children who have IEPs versus children who happen to score low on the math assessment?
I don't have, like, the IEP data. I could definitely look at that. The bulk of the students that began this process, I would say, were state data, or as a result of our state data. So that's definitely decreased as a result of that. But I'd have to look at in terms of what the exact number for students having IEPs.
The main reason I was wondering was you were speaking about, you know, having no students needing AIS, but I was wondering, like, there has to be some percentage that say there's a child with a math disability and that kind of thing versus somebody who tanked during the test.
Correct.
So, yeah.
Emily, if you look at the staffing from POB Middle School to Matlin, there is, I believe, almost a 1.0 difference in the staffing, and a lot of that has to do with the POB Middle School special education program and those students receiving services there. So we have allocated more resources in that way.
Yeah, there's a difference of 0.8, which would be more or less 0.2 per grade level to support that.
The other piece of that, as Christian said, we don't just use the New York State exam results. So that feedback is gleaned throughout the year from teachers, and we have our own criteria. The state does have a minimum, but that is a minimum. The districts locally can determine their AIS criteria. And as you know, the state has really cut that down just because districts needed more staffing. However, we have not changed our criteria. We do have some students who have received a 2 on the New York State exam, but in fact are on a monitor program for us. So there is a teacher assigned to that child who needs to continually check in to make sure that they're not slipping any further and more so making gains within their individual goals.
I realize this is probably another one that's sort of impossible to answer from the data, but one of, I guess, the hopes that we'd had for RTI was that if we were giving students intervention early enough, they wouldn't end up needing to go through the process. And I'm wondering, I'm not asking for an answer right now, but I'm sort of hoping that that's happening.
And I think one of the things that we've, particularly at the middle schools, this is the first year in adding the 0.5, and one of the things in really just working with Christian over the past couple of years and identifying those students who have received AIS. One thing we noted is, particularly in the elementary schools, the focus was more on grades 3 and 4, and just due to the limited number of staff members to provide those interventions, we really weren't getting to those first and second graders like we should have, and we all know that the research says early intervention is best at this point, but the number of students in 3 and 4 who obviously needed support, you had to use your resources some ways over another. And the 0.5, as Mrs. Gray has said, has really been beneficial just in the past few months because it's pushing, it's 20 minutes, it's working on those fluency and basic concept development. So again, I think once we see that roll out a little bit more and flesh itself out and meet the needs of many more students, hopefully we can see some of that reducing in the upper grades.
Just a follow-up. I know last year we added a 0.5 to each of the elementary schools. For this year. What's the total? I know that in the presentation it said 1.5 and 0.5. What's the total now in each?
Each elementary school has 1.5 math specialists.
Yes,
correct. And in the middle schools, you'll note some people are math teachers. Well, I shouldn't say math teachers, but are just designated for math AIS. And in some of the 7th and 8th grade math teachers programs, they might have a 0.2 of their schedule allocated to provide AIS services. We try to match those students with their math teacher if that teacher has the 0.2 available.
In grade 7, we had 39% of our kids not meeting expectations. Why do you think, and I know when we saw the statistic coming in, we didn't do so great. How are we going to correct this, or what are we going to do to give extra help? What is the remediation for this?
I'll first begin with when you look at our refusal numbers for grade three, that was the lowest amount of refusals. We were right around 30% or 38%. And then when you look at grade seven, it was close to 60%. So I think there's a big correlation behind students not taking the state assessment to also not proficient on those exams. And then in terms of what support we're giving, again, we didn't have a huge number of students for that particular grade level take it. So while percentage-wise it looks like we have to provide all these services, number-wise it's not that huge. But again, those students would preferably get services from their eighth grade math teacher, and that would be done either a lab or math AS.
We know that there's more and more reading now in math than ever before, especially in some of these assessments with the word problems and the things like that. So do we have meetings and articulation between the AIS math teachers and AIS reading teachers? And do we see that there are some children who are math only versus reading only versus more who are both?
So I'm laughing because Christian and I just met with Eileen Anino and some of our consultants to talk about the correlations between the AIS students, the way we're teaching reading, and the way we need to be teaching math. One of the things that's opened up are those 20-minute fluency periods for first grade, but then that's also giving us an opportunity to build more language or to work on word problems. Just what does this word mean? The academic vocabulary is now translating in some of the first grade classrooms into their notebooks. We weren't able to do that when it was a constant, push in, push out without enough support. So we're exploring right now in the elementary schools the similarities between the two workshops, what we need to do better in math and how it aligns itself to what the work that's being done in Reader's Workshop. It's easy when the kids can translate, when they can just move from Reader's to math and use those same ideas, those big ideas of how we're teaching a small group. We're working on embedding more small groups into the math workshop. That wasn't necessarily happening over the last few years. It was more whole group, we're all going to work on this together, but now we're differentiating a lot more.
Thank you very much, guys. That was really informative.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, if there are any other math AIS specialists here, can you just wave? It's Louise Cadaldo or anyone? No? Okay. And for those math teachers here at the high school, here's a shout out that we're getting those kids ready for you.
Okay. This brings us to public participation. District policy number 15101 provides that persons wishing to make comments or raise questions shall, one, state their name and address, and two, indicate on whose behalf they are speaking if a non-resident. This policy prohibits public discussion on matters relating to staff and students at which their reputation, privacy, or rights to due process, or those of others could be in some way violated. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes. I ask that everyone please be quiet, courteous, kind, and respectful in the audience. Sometimes the murmuring that you guys do between yourselves gets in the way of the person trying to talk to us, so they lose their thoughts or we can't hear. Let's all just try to keep this as respectful as possible. Thank you very much. Floor is open.
Sharon Becker, 1 Cypress Lane, Plainview. I'm going to try to do this really quickly because we have a lot to cover. We submitted via email basically some of the comments that I'm going to make now. I hope you received it. We solicited about 50 individuals who live within the 1 mile eligibility radius for the high school busing. What we are requesting of the board is to carefully consider and review opening up that eligibility for students that are within the 1 mile walking distance. That walking distance is not necessarily the 1 mile, but to really carefully look at the distance as far as the roadways in which they have to cross. The health and safety of our students are a priority. We have universal busing, but a lot of our children have to cross heavily trafficked roads that are vulnerable to cars and buses and trucks. Washington Avenue has increasingly become a heavily trafficked road during both morning commutes and after school hours over the past several years. There's only one crosswalk with a traffic light at Kennedy Drive and Washington Avenue. There are no crossing guard security supervision at any point on Washington Avenue to assist students. The sun first rises between 6:45 a.m. and 7:30 a.m. for much of October through March. Driver's visibility for these 6 months is limited, especially because portions of Washington Avenue are poorly lit. Portions of Washington Avenue do not have sidewalks, and where there are sidewalks, they are in disrepair or they become impassable with snow, ice, non-removal of the leaves, non-shoveled sidewalks. And without sidewalks, students are forced to walk on the shoulder of Washington Avenue with a speed limit, as you know, of 40 miles an hour, and most traffic exceeds that limit. Increased danger exists during the winter when the roads are plowed and the shoulder of Washington is covered by piled snow, forcing the students to then walk on Washington Avenue itself. In addition, since the implementation of this ineligibility, distracted driving due to the use of cell phones has dramatically increased, and that adds to the danger for our students attempting to cross the busy roads and intersections. This also includes students living off of Old Country Road and Minetta Hill Road, where there are no crossing guards present, and they must cross at the crosswalk. Finally, not having the bus transportation is obviously a hardship to working families who have to figure out how to get their children to school prior to them even, you know, after they leave, or, you know, if they have to commute to work by train, they already have gone. They have to get their kids to school, and in the early afternoon hours, 1:45 dismissal later on, it's very hard for parents to get their children home. While we understand there may be budget considerations involved in this, obviously the health and safety of our students is not, you know, a negotiable item for us, especially in all weather, sometimes in darkness, lugging their heavy backpacks, musical instruments, sport equipment, and the like. Now, I have noticed that recently with the changes in all the bus schedules that both Matlin and POB, especially here at Matlin, the buses start lining up at 2:05. There is the full circle complete with buses about 2:15. And the dismissal from the middle school is not until a half hour later, 40 minutes later. So clearly there's some wiggle room because all of the buses are being utilized for Matlin at POB at that point. So if they're all parked there, clearly we could find a way to, you know, enable some of these buses to run the routes that are off of Washington Avenue. So I urge the board to really carefully review not the distance as mileage on a map, but to really carefully look at the roadways in which the kids have to cross. It is truly dark. There's a lot of distractions in the morning. It's a hardship for the kids, and their health and safety are in jeopardy. And I think that's it. Sorry, I ran out of time. But we have about 50 people within those areas that we've gotten some, you know, their names and addresses. It was not a formal petition. We didn't get signatures, but names and addresses so you could verify are on here. And I can leave this here with you. We have another list of signatures right here. Thank you very much. Sorry, I went over.
Thank you, and Jean, you'll thank you.
Good evening. My name is Jordan Picor. I'm a science teacher here at Plainview High School. Every day I have two goals when teaching your children. I think about the main principle in physics that I want to convey, but probably more importantly, I think about what I can teach them outside the curriculum, things like hard work, time management, and setting priorities. In light of how the teachers' union has been treated in recent months, this has become more and more difficult. How can I teach your children to respect their teachers when the board doesn't see any urgency in making a fair contract proposal to the teachers? How can I teach time management and the value of handing in work on time when the board thinks it's business as usual when a teacher's contract expires and another one's not in place? How can I teach setting priorities when the board has not made settling the teacher's contract the number one priority? How can I teach you get what you pay for when my colleagues in neighboring districts such as Hicksville at top salary make $6,000 more than top salary teachers here, $15,000 less than what we make than what they make in Bethpage, and $18,000 less than what they make in Syosset? The teachers of this district work day in and day out to give your children the best school experience possible. The board has publicly acknowledged that the teachers gave back 4 years ago when financial times were tough and we took 4 years of zeros. Now that financial times have improved, it's time that teachers got a fair contract. In reviewing this year's board goals, one can see the priorities of this Board of Education. Under the heading of fiscal planning, negotiating a fair and equitable contract with the teachers' union was placed as the 10th bullet out of 10, almost as if it was an afterthought. We'll get to it when we can. It's time that changed. The teachers of the school district are your most important resource. We are the ones who make this district a special place for your children to grow up. Invest in us, make us a priority, treat us fairly, and we will make sure the district continues to be the exceptional place that it is. Thank you.
Thank you. Just one point of clarification. When we were doing our goals, we made it clear that the order of the bullets doesn't mean anything, and we said that several times during our goal discussions.
Hi, my name is Caroline Sarikoff, 9 Cypress Lane, and I'm just speaking in support of the busing subject. From a personal note, I'm a working parent. I have a 7th grader and a 4th grader. Last year, I employ a high school student to babysit my children after school. There were 7 days last year where the high school student had to cancel because she couldn't walk on Washington Avenue. Her mother wouldn't let her. She felt uncomfortable. Several other days, I had to call her parent, who had to come home from work. She works locally, to drive her to our house to babysit. As a working parent, I can't take off days of work because I have to come home at 1:45 to take my babysitter home to my kids. Additionally, I happen to have a student, a daughter who has a back brace. She carries a heavy backpack in school. She can't walk a mile with a heavy backpack. And it's, I think you really need to take into consideration where I'm not saying you change the busing because of me and my personal situation, but I know many, many working parents who live across Washington Avenue who are in a similar situation. We might not have kids in the high school yet, but we're getting very fearful of when our kids get to the high school, or if we do have kids in the high school in our neighborhood, that not everyone gets a car. Not everyone feels comfortable letting their kid get in a car with an 11th grader. And there has to be another option for people to consider so that, you know, we don't have to change our work schedules in a dramatic fashion. I've already changed my work schedule to accommodate getting my kids to school. And obviously, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But making working parents come home at 1:45 to take their kids home is really not something that's supporting the community and what most families these days have to do. So I urge you to reconsider the universal busing. Thanks.
My name is Janet Rutkowski. I'm the clerical unit president. I'm proud of the work of the clerical unit. Each day, clericals of this district support administrators, teachers, parents, and especially the students, not only by the work they do, but sometimes by small acts of kindness they show to our students, many times go unnoticed. Working at the high school, I see firsthand the amazing, bright, and talented students we have in our schools. These students did not attain their successes in a vacuum. Besides the love and support of their parents, our students receive knowledge and guidance from their dedicated teachers and counselors every day. During our last negotiations, the PCT and CUPCT helped this district over the hurdle of financial difficulties by accepting a contract that clearly was not in our best interest financially. Our board and our superintendent thanked us, told us it would be remembered, and the next negotiations would be better. It is now that time, and it is certainly not better. This board has lost the trust of our members. We do not believe that you have any intention of keeping your word. Mr. Batan, it is now your turn to do the right thing. Not only because your word should mean something, but because we deserve more. Thank you.
Good evening. Jack Wolfner, 151 Sutton Drive. First of all, in this holiday season, I want to wish everybody a happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and happy holidays. In listening to the presentation on the way construction is coming along, I regret that I didn't bring my notebook from the bond study committee, because I see some items here that I don't recall having been included in the bond issue, but I'm sure they're needed. And I guess priorities have changed in the last year or so, but I will question that later on. In going through your agenda here, I must
just
say...
Just, Jack, if I could, I don't know if you're here for the whole presentation, but some of the work is out of capital reserve and some of it's out of transfer to capital.
Yes, I know.
That's on that list. It's all not necessarily being done with bond work, with bond dollars. If you want to contact Mr. Cunningham or anything specifically, I'm sure he'd be happy to answer that question for you.
I'm sure he will. In going through your agenda here, I got to say that a lot of the items are explained very definitively. However, I would like to hear a full discussion on item 8.10, which is approval of transfers to the budget report. I don't know whether that means approval of transfers within the budget or what it entails. I'd be interested in hearing a full discussion on that. Thank you very much, and again, happy holidays.
Stephanie Nelkins, 55 Acorn Lane. Number one, I just want to support the idea of universal busing. We live enough miles away from the school that it's not an issue, but just seeing the one day my son missed the bus and what goes on just trying to get the kids from the parking lot up to the school is very scary. It was scary for me as a driver, and I just think it's something that needs to be addressed. A lot of just the safety before something happens, and then we go back and look and see and say, oh, what can we do better? I think being proactive in that, the kids are just, it's priceless for everyone involved for that to be looked at. I personally made a phone call to the police department trying to find out about a crossing guard at that situation. Haven't heard back yet. I will continue to explore that. I've been in touch with Mr. Murray about that. He's in support of what I'm doing. But for kids walking, it's incredible. And the backpacks are, you know, they wouldn't be allowed as carry-on. So, you know, it's just something to think about. Anyway, I'm again here, as usual, to talk about math. And I was wondering, in terms of what plan has been made for trigonometry, if there's been a schedule of courses and outline, things kids can use to start, you know, or practically almost at midterms already. You know, we're going to blink, it'll be the Christmas vacation, then midterms, and, you know, and then suddenly things speed up. Kids have AP exams. It'll be Regents time. So what's going on in terms of that? You're not smiling, Gary. You look happy.
So as I'm sure you know, there was a presentation done on the Algebra 2 trig, Algebra 2 curriculum, and also the trig exam, and there was a timeline within that presentation that can be referred to off the math website. We just did some algebra review sessions, and then within that timeline, I believe it's February, March, some of the trig portions will be introduced. There'll be some additional after-school sessions at that point in time. And then, again, there will be follow-up sessions prior to the May exam, June exam, and then after the June exam. So I don't have the timeline in front of me, but, again, that's listed within the timeline when those sessions will be held.
Is there a schedule of, you know, these are the 12 topics, these are the six sessions, you know, just, you know, what's going on with that. These are the times so people could make arrangements. Our kids are busy.
I don't have it in front of me, that the presentation, but as we did for these past algebra exams, the groups were differentiated based on the needs of the students, and that will continue to happen in, I believe, February, March session. But again, we thank you for your feedback, and you know, we'll look into how the topics are introduced, but it will be spread out consistently from February, March, and then into the prior to the June, and then after the June exam.
And what's going on in terms of giving the kids any sort of support in terms of a book? I had brought in that book on trig. There's another one on Common Core, Algebra 2, trig, but they're taking two Regents exams, so they would need help with both.
All right, well, I'm going to answer this last question just for time purposes, but books will be ordered, as we have spoken about at the last meeting, for the trig portion. The issue with the two books is one of the books is the Algebra 2 trig, and obviously the trig topics are introduced within that. However, we did not feel comfortable rolling that out to kids and just saying, here's a book. So our goal is to label those portions of the book where those specific topics are, rather than handing the child the whole book.
No, I don't understand what that means.
So it's an Algebra 2 book. There's an Algebra
2 book,
and
right.
There's an Algebra 2 trig book.
Right.
Our goal is to look at the Algebra 2 trig book, pull out the trig topics, and specifically identify them as to what the topics are and which ones the child should pay attention to.
So does that mean you're purchasing that book? Or so when would they be getting that book?
You know what? We can talk about this at another time. This is not like a question answer, but I don't know the time frame in terms of which they'll be delivered.
And as far as the Common Core book?
I can call you tomorrow if you have further questions.
Thank you.
Hi, good evening. My name is Denise Cieli, and I have been a teacher, at Plainview High School for over 20 years now. I want to talk today about my concerns about our lack of progression in our negotiations. I'm not alone in the fact that I am the primary wage earner in my house. Many of my colleagues are the primary wage earners in our houses, and our taxes have been going up, and our bills have been going up, and our salary has not been going up. And we understand that we made an agreement in our last contract that we would accept a zero salary increase for 4 years. But we also made that agreement understanding that there was an economic crisis at the time, and we were thanked for being helpful to the district at that time. My family depends on my salary to provide for their basic needs. And I just don't understand. I'm having a difficult time understanding how you've thanked us publicly for agreeing in the last negotiation to a salary scale that was significantly less than we deserved. And I don't understand how now it's difficult for you to come to an agreement with us on a fair contract with a fair salary increase so that my family can have what they need. That's really all I have to say. Sorry.
Good evening, Jeffrey Gursky, 16 Milford Drive. Happy holidays to everyone on the board. I wasn't expecting to come in here to speak tonight on busing. I thought I was just going to be a spectator, just showing support. I also didn't expect the whole room filled with teachers. So just a quick moment to let all the teachers in here know that 13 years ago when my wife and I moved to this town, it was because of you all. So thank you. Speaking on busing, it's rather important, because I live walking distance to the school, that everyone within a mile or reasonably outside of a mile be given the opportunity for busing, especially within inside the mile.
We have a very unique street here. There's 40 miles an hour road here. It's not treated like a normal road in front of normal schools where it's as low as 25, 20 miles an hour speed limit. 40 miles an hour is very fast. There's one traffic light at the corner of Minetto Hill, and then there's another one in front of the high school. Cars go very straight and very fast on this straightaway. And having lived on Milford, which is 150 yards from Washington Avenue, I can tell you in 12 years, Washington Avenue is a mess during the winter. It's an ignored mess largely during the winter when the plows are out and snow and ice is building on the side of the roads. It is unpassable by people walking, biking, jogging, exercising, anything. I have to apologize to everyone in the room, including my friends who brought me here tonight. I've been selfish. I haven't even really considered it. Now that my oldest son is now beginning high school this first year, now it's an issue to me, and I've ignored it. So I apologize to you all for ignoring it, but it's a real hazard, and it should be changed immediately. I think it's unfair that we all pay our taxes that go to the schools, that go to transportation, and our students are not given any benefit for that service that we're paying for. In fact, that benefit is going to students who are getting extra because they live a mile and further away. So I don't find that fair at all. There's nothing to address that. So I think it should be changed, not just because it's unfair, but it's incredibly unsafe. And God forbid something should happen to any of the children walking along Washington Avenue. You know you guys would change something in a heartbeat after that. So let's make the right move and get busing to these kids and really call it, honestly, universal busing. Why don't you do that? Thank you for your time.
Good evening. Debbie Riviezzo, special education teacher at the high school for 18 years, vice president of the PCT for the high school. The members of the PCT are a diverse group of people, and yet we share a single purpose this evening, to achieve a fair contract. We ask that the district, which has thanked us publicly for the sacrifices we have made in the last contract, do the honorable thing and give us a contract that reflects the work we do and the caliber of the education we provide for the children of Old Bethpage. The best resource you can provide a child is not an electronic gadget or some trendy program. The best resource this district has, the one that has the most consistent positive impact on the students, is the faculty. The teachers, clericals, OTs, PTs, nurses, who work with the kids day in and day out. And I just have to, as a side note, say as I was flipping through the notes for tonight's meeting that there are several lines about obsolete equipment that are to be disposed of. Teachers, I'm here 18 years. I'm not obsolete. Something changes, I still work. I even work when the internet doesn't, and that's quite frequently. Compensating our staff in such a way that enables us to take care of our own families makes sense and is the fair thing to do. Making Plainview Old Bethpage a great place to work so that we continue to attract top-notch staff is an investment in the education of the children of this district, both today and for years to come. And I also have to add on a personal note that I, like many of my colleagues, in terms of finances, I am the head of my household. I am the primary wage earner in my family. I don't know if the district is aware of that, that that is a fact for most of us, but this is not a side job to my family. I'm the primary wage earner. We, the members of the PCT, call upon the Board of Education, as well as Central Administration, to show your commitment to your greatest asset and to bring about a fair and expedient settlement to our contract. Thank you.
Hi, thanks for this opportunity. My name is Nadine Schiffer. I live on Holly Lane within the 1 mile radius. I have three children, a 15-year-old who's in 10th grade, a seventh grader at Matlin, and a 2-year-old. I don't have to worry about her right now. But my 10th grader I do, my son Matthew, he's a runner. He runs to school if I don't drive him. Most days I drive him. I have to tell you the backup in the morning. I work full time. And it takes me 15 to 20 minutes to go down Washington, just a couple blocks, to get him down Kennedy, to get him to the school. I sometimes get in late to work, and he sometimes just makes it under the bell, and then he runs. And I tell him, don't run, because he could slip.
because the sidewalks are so slippery on the way to the school. My seventh grader, right now I don't worry, there's Matlin, she has a bus, but she stays late. She's a sports enthusiast. There's no crosswalk. There's no woman to cross her, and we're only two blocks away. So I get very nervous. My son's almost 6 feet. Maybe I don't have to worry about anyone dragging him into a van. My daughter, she's 5'5 and beautiful. I'm afraid. I'm afraid that when she goes to high school, you just never know. It's a really crazy world that we live in. I really don't want her walking home at 1:45 when I'm not there to meet her. I'm nervous. I'm nervous that there's no bus that she can go on to get home and to have her have a key to my house. She's only 12 years old. Please reconsider. It's really important that we have busing within the one-mile radius. Thank you for the opportunity.
Good evening. Morton Rosenfeld, president of the Plainview Congress of Teachers. I can't find any more eloquence than those who got up from our ranks tonight and did what's very hard for them to do, ask you to treat them fair economically. Being a person of a certain age gives one a perspective on things. I'm reminded this evening, listening to these young people come up and talk to you about their economic needs, of the very origins of the PCT. When the union was formed, it was formed by essentially a group of elementary teachers, all women by and large, all of whom wore a little button that they were almost afraid to wear, but somehow found the courage to wear. And it called for dignity and status. They felt as though in those days they were being treated in an undignified manner, that they had no status as professional people. And so they formed this union to bring them that. I hear echoes of that sentiment as I travel through the buildings talking to the members, and I think you can hear some of that in the comments that were made 2 weeks ago, that were made here this evening, and that will be made in weeks to come as we continually come to remind you of the needs of our members for a fair and equitable process. Talking about that process, I don't see one in place to precipitate a settlement in any reasonable amount of time. While I enjoy calling my friend Mr. Gersio from time to time, and he me, to exchange readings of each other's temperature, I don't really see that as leading anywhere. I'm reminded that our union with past boards of education would meet for a protracted period of time and hammer something out. Nothing like that is happening. We made what we thought was a fair proposal to the Board of Education. You responded to part of it. I know you're expecting us to now counter-propose, but you didn't even respond to our whole proposal. Our proposal was carefully designed to recognize that these are still difficult economic times. And we purposely fashioned that proposal with many non-economic items that we could work with you on that would mean a tremendous amount to our members and would cost you not a nickel. Yes, there needs to be more money. There needs to be a combination of non-monetary items, but there needs to be a process where we sit down and hammer this thing out once and for all. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Jeremy Guttenberg, Sherwood Drive. I'm within the one-mile radius, and I am also lending my support for universal busing. Coincidentally, and this sort of hits home, the woman who spoke before me, Nadine, and her son was crossing the street by Matlin. I happened to be driving up Washington Avenue going to get my daughter. He didn't see me. I luckily saw him as he bolted across the street with no crossing guard. It's going to happen. It's scary. I'm also asking you consider a crossing guard back at Matlin and also at by the high school. We were all teenage drivers at one point in time. You pull out of that drive, that parking lot, and you don't. The speed is rapid. The road is 40 miles per hour, and it's just an accident waiting to happen. So please consider it. Thank you very much.
You know, Mr. Patin, we've heard many of the comments tonight about the crossing guards, and we will follow up with the county on that to see if there's anything that can be addressed.
Hi, my name's Eileen Gursky. I live at 16 Milford Drive. I also wanted to talk about the universal busing. You know, with respect to the snow, the roads are dangerous. You're making us parents get on the roads when there could be less cars on the road and less, you know, people at danger. Because if not, we have to have our kids walk. It's just, you know, I'm lucky I get to work from home. So if it's bad weather, I can get my son. But if I didn't work from home and that there could become a time when I'm not, I have to be concerned. And those 15, 20 minutes that my son is coming home, you know, you're making all of us parents, you know, panic about that. And then the other thing is that private school people get a bus no matter where they live. You are mandated by law to have them get a bus to their school. We should get a bus. We live in this district. I mean, I know they live in the district, but they choose to go to private school. Thank you.
That's everybody. Do I have a motion for routine business? Emily, Debbie, any holds, separations? 8.10, Rich.
Okay, docket 8.10, budget transfers. We have a policy on budget transfers, policy 5330, which says that the board has to be presented with a budget transfer schedule once a month or every month. So this shows up on our meeting. If you could leave quietly, I'd appreciate it.
I don't want to wait.
Thank you. So this particular docket has $131,000 worth of budget transfers on it. It's net zero. That means we're crediting one account to debit another. Most of the budget transfers are covering the cost of foster tuition. We have some students in a foster home who had been in Plainview Old Bethpage. Now they're residing, hopefully temporarily, in another district, but we're required to pay that foster tuition to another district. And then there are just some salary reclassifications because we're moving. It was budgeted in one area, such as custodial, but we moved it to maintenance because it was a better place to pay it out of.
Thank you. All those in favor? Motion for new business, additional staff development proposals. Ginger, Emily, discussion. All those in favor? New business, motion for the Board of Education to approve field trips for POB Middle School to Boston, Mass. And HB Matlin to Boston, Mass. And Lindenhurst, New Jersey. Lauren, Debbie, discussions. All those in favor? Motion to go into executive session for matters of negotiations. Emily, Seth, all those in favor? Thank you very much. We'll see you in 2 weeks.